fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You know, I remember having this moment where I was walking and there's this card, this Oracle, ayahuasca Oracle deck, and they have like lessons and stuff. And one of them is like the beauty way, like think Lakota beauty way, that there's beauty in front of me, beauty to my right, beauty behind me, there's beauty to my left, there's beauty above me and beauty below me and beauty within me. And I always like thought it was like this thing that I had to train myself to see, to see things as beautiful. But I was walking with Duke and I wasn't thinking about the beauty way, but I remembered I was doing some inquiry practice where I was like, you know, where is this thought arising? Who is aware of this thought, or what is even aware of this thought happening? Or I can't remember what the question I asked was, but basically just the thought expressing itself in that moment of openness and of non-identification. It was, I don't even remember what the thought was, but it was so beautiful that it even happened. I was like, oh my God, it's a complete and utter mystery that thought arises from. Or I think I said like, from where is the thought arising from?
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was so mysterious and completely unknown. And something about it was just so incomprehensibly beautiful.
Good.
And in that moment, everything was just so beautiful because it was just coming out of, it was a miracle. Everything was coming out of nothing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and then in that moment, it was like a lightning bolt. It was like, oh, that's the beauty way.
Yeah.
It's not training myself to see everything as beautiful, but it's just recognizing that everything in every direction is inherently beautiful. And it's like, oh, it's, fuck.
I call that, or I relate to that as what I like, I call it that, the living mystery.
Yeah.
To live in the living mystery is to not identify anything, to not know anything, to not know why anything is, to not know where anything is coming from, including your own thoughts. And to live in that mystery allows for the visceral beauty to blossom within you and around you, like you're saying. Because you're not the mind has this tendency to assign labels to everything. And in labeling, you're encapsulating. You're no longer experiencing what it is. You're experiencing your story of what it is.
Yeah.
So in that, you're taking out the mystery. You're taking out the miracle. You're taking out the magic, or at least seeming to. That's the illusion. The magic, the mystery is always what is. It's already there. It's already that living beauty that you say that you're talking about, and it's this unknowability of it that is the true beauty of it. It allows you to at least contact or experience the beauty of it. Yeah, that's what I call the living mystery, and I think I just get that from like probably religious language. I've heard that being being said. I don't know how they describe it, but that just seems like a term that applies here.
Yeah, totally. And that's allowing, right? That's just allowing the nature of what is in all its mystery to be. And then it's like, holy fuck, you know.
Yeah.
But I would like to be in that state more often than
Well,
I
it's
am.
yeah. I mean, it's just about feeling into the accessibility of it. It's the immediacy of it. It's that feeling when you turn the corner in Yosemite and there's just this landscape that you weren't expecting, 'cause how could you? You know, you couldn't label it if you tried. You know what I mean? And so, like, you and me, when we're in these spaces, we're just constantly saying, wow. You know, like, how many times have we been caught in these moments where we say nothing except wow? And literally for like hours, we're just saying wow, because we're stuck in this awe moment of indescribability. That's the living mystery. That's recognizing the inherent beauty of unknowability. There, we can't possibly encapsulate this experience in story or projection or thought or anything. We can't encapsulate this, and that's the living mystery. That's the living beauty. And so, like, those are those moments, those where you're just stuck in the awe that, like, we've gotten very good at cultivating. You know what I mean? We've gotten very good at finding the doorway to awe, the living mystery, and sitting on the other side of that doorway. Like, when you and I are together, I haven't felt that in a shared experience with anybody else as frequently as I have with you.
Totally. Yeah, something definitely gets magnified or like doubled when we're, or like not even doubled, it's beyond doubled, but you know what I mean?
Exponentialed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That dude, that's so funny you say that. In one of our recent group satsangs, somebody mentioned something
Yeah.
like that, and I brought up the example of Ra. And I don't know, I'm revisiting these books, obviously. This is probably my fourth time rereading the Law of One by Ra. I don't read the whole books again. I just read the underlined portions that I underlined and starred and whatever. But one of the things that Ra has said is when there's two people, when there's one person looking, it's powerful. When there's two people looking, it's not a doubling effect, it's an exponential effect. When there's three people looking together, and it keeps going. It's an exponential each time. It's not a multiplier. It's an exponential of the looking energy. And Jesus' teaching has said something similar, where wherever two meet in my name, there I am. And it's the same. That's just kind of like a parable way of saying, a story way of saying, wherever two meet, wherever two are looking for me, for God, there's this exponential effect of the energy there. And so that's kind of what that is what we're experiencing. We're experiencing this exponential effect of the living mystery together, as our awe is
Yeah.
joined, it's exponentialed.
And that's how I've realized that that's how the for those that use a guru path, that's how the guru path works. Is it's like the guru and then the guru and then the guru. It's just like it's a telescope or like a like you know, like how remember how we've talked about like certain teachers being doorways to the absolute,
Totally.
and then they are just that for people. It's like the guru relationship is like that, but strung through beings and time, where it's like when you're connected to that, it's just like, so that's what they really encourage you to like take refuge in the guru when it's a real deal, you know, like a not.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Someone taking advantage, but like, because then it's like, it's that multiplying effect. And then it's just like, and that's what this is something newer, but like, there's something anyway. But yeah, I mean, that's also too, like with like, doing like shamanic journeys in a group is always so much more potent, you know, and same thing with prayer, you know, it's like, it's awesome. And that's what's so important with like community too. I mean, one of the many reasons why it's important with community, because it's like, it's just, we're never alone and we're never separate. But then when we really gather together with intention,
yep.
Whew, holy fuck, man. Yeah. Like that's something really special. And that's why I think like, ooh, this is just a little bit of a tangent, but like, I had this thought. I have like this newer professor who's like weirdly obsessed with like Elon Musk and Steve Jobs and stuff. And his purpose, he got into Western medicine and Chinese medicine so that he could help extend the lives of our geniuses so they can save humanity. And I'm just like,
who's describing the genius?
Yeah, right.
That better be a pretty wise individual who's ever ascribing who is the genius here.
Well, and I got on this like trip and I'm just like, oh, this guy fucking sucks. But then I'm like thinking, I'm like, you know, I've heard it described that like the second coming of Christ is not an individual, but it's in like humanity recognizing Christ within themselves as a collective entity, mm-hmm. you know, and then I realized like, well, the Antichrist in that would be like continuing to worship like an individual who's like celebrated in their individuality mm-hmm. as being a savior, you know, like Trump's gonna fucking, he's gonna save us, you know, he's gonna save us, or like Elon, like he's gonna save us. We celebrate these like icons as individuals and thinking they're gonna save us, and it's like, and Jesus was that back then. He was an individual, but he was tapping into the thing. He was opening the door for us to all walk through. And it's like, and as far as I've experienced, all my spiritual spirals are pulling the rug out under what worked before to move into the next thing. And it's just like, yeah, if the second coming of Christ is in humanity recognizing it within themselves as a community, then the Antichrist is like celebrating the individual who stands as a savior.
Exactly.
You know, and who's holding so desperately onto my individuality. And it's like, there you go. Yeah, very charismatic.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I've had these conversations with this exact conversation actually with somebody else at work, which is really funny. But you're exactly right. And like, it can be very polarizing and charged to use the terms like the Christ or the Antichrist. But what we're literally talking about is the polarization of energies. We're talking about an energy of pure, vast, pure consciousness, full acceptance of all it is, and the contraction, isolated mode of like like you said, worshiping the golden calf, or worshiping the individualized identity as the savior. And these are the two polar opposites. They're clearly polarizations. What's interesting is, this is one of the things that I'm a little hung up on, that I need to think about more. I need to sit with more. Does this path of pure acceptance also accept the Antichrist, or the impetus to worship a deity, to worship an individual? Is that part of the full acceptance, or is there, it's not just, this is not just love. This is love combined with wisdom. Is the evolution of spirituality.
Yeah, totally.
And so does the wisdom then cut that section off and be like, I'm sorry, you are not going with the program here. The program, like, I do not have to tolerate your intolerance, is another way of saying this. I tolerate everything. Full tolerance of everything is what I am. However, the one thing I can't tolerate is intolerance.
That's, I think, so I try to always, I've thought about this one a lot too, and I've debated some of my friends at school about it. Like for instance, like with like Luigi, you know,
Mangione.
yeah, half of me is like, fuck yeah, like these CEOs really should, like they should be fucking scared, and they should be like getting the wake up call of like, people aren't going to take it anymore.
That's
And
my
then there's
natural
another
reaction
part,
too.
huh?
That's my natural reaction too.
But then there's another part of me that realizes that my healing is your healing, and your healing is my healing, and your pain is my pain, and my pain is, you know, like, and so, and it's like, that in my own microcosm of experience, I've never hated myself into health, and I've never hated myself into healing. You know, so acts of hate, and it's my limited experience in the microcosm, acts of hate, even the, you know, like probably don't lead to overall healing. And it's also like not being a total passive doormat, you know,
Totally.
like in my own microcosm of healing, like I'm going to take really aggressive action if I'm in danger of dying,
Totally.
you know? And, or like, you know, I'm going to take aggressive action if someone's like threatening physical harm, then yeah, I'm going to do something. Where does that lie on a microcosm to macrocosm scale? You know? So when I look at it that way, I'm like, what Luigi did is probably like, not the best, you know, and also too, in terms of like looking at my own microcosm of like healing and practice, and also looking at mindfulness, it's like, you know, there's the wheel of samsara, and then there's the wheel of mindfulness, and you spin, you don't try to stop the wheel of samsara, you spin the wheel of mindfulness, which goes in the opposite direction, and eventually the momentum cancels it out. It's the same thing with like healthy habits of like, okay, like I am smoking and I'm drinking and I'm doing all this other stuff. They're not great habits. But if I, instead of trying to focus on trying to cut out my unhealthy habits, I'm just going to focus on the habits that I know are healthy and add those in and keep focusing on building and growing those until the old ones fall away. You know? And so in with your question, I relate to that. What I think is, it's like the community and the compassion and wisdom, it knows that that exists, and it takes action when things are, when are a direct threat, like a real threat. Like I feel like lately,
Not a storied threat.
exactly, not.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at rss.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With rss.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Using the perception of a threat, or like, you know, I feel like lately it's been like kind of like preemptively like being like, oh, that's like, that's a fucking like, yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Totally.
But and so, but like, so, but this, they're like, they're not even, this community is not like, they have one eye on them to make sure that it's like no direct harm or threat is there. But most of their energy is just focused on growing this. Mm-hmm. And eventually, and that's also like Western and Eastern medicine. Like Eastern medicine, if we think of the body as being a garden, Eastern medicine is all about preventative. So I'm going to create the conditions in my garden in which disease cannot grow. And then if somehow a disease or like a whatever, a weed or whatever happens, then we can use Western medicine, which is like extractive, and then like cut it out. But it's not like this malicious, like hateful thing. It's just a removing of that, you know? So that's where I've been sitting, is like focus on growing the good. But, and at the same time, if I'm using Chinese medicine as a model, there's like external invasions. So like you can't tonify the good if it, so it's kind of like a robber in a bank thing. Like you can't lock the robber inside the house and then start pumping the house full of resources. You have to kick the robber out first and then grow it. So it's, yeah, I don't have a good answer, but these are things I think I've been thinking about a lot.
No, and then thinking about them is part of the process too, of like just maturing the wisdom here. And but I think what you said is really important, that it, and it's true in that it's important not to give that all of your energy, like mm-hmm. like what, like Trump and Elon and all these, you know, what seems to be a potential for quote unquote the Antichrist or pro individual ideology, it doesn't take up a whole lot of thought in my mind. It's just, you know, but when these things are clearly present in the zeitgeist, clearly to polarizing potentials within humanity, like the acknowledgement that it exists, it is clearly right and correct. We can't say that this does not exist. But I think you're right. It's also not just full acceptance to the point where you allow it to persist. If there's a direct and immediate threat, you act. And,
yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we'll see when that point comes, and hopefully hopefully that point is recognized when it's here. It's also interesting that there's so many parallels to like what I'm revisiting in The Law of One, by Ra. You know, it's. There seems to be, he outlines two distinct paths for human spirituality, and it is service to self or service to others. And service to others is not a neglect of self. It is in a full embrace of self and others as oneself, as all oneself. And this other path is service to self, like just me, just this self. You know, this isolated self. And that seems to be the trajectory, the two pathways that humanity can take. And also there's all these stories about the division of Earth the earth dividing into two separate pathways. And Bashar, for example, you know, Bashar, the channeled entity, has talked about this a little bit, and he's saying that the earth isn't going to actually rip in half, but it's two different consciousnesses which will become so divergent, the service to self path or the service to others path, will become so divergent in their frequencies that they will literally become two separate parallel realities.
Wow.
To where and parallel realities isn't necessarily that one can't see the other.
Yeah.
It's just that energetically and vibrationally, they don't affect each other. It's like there's a glass separator, a glass divide between the two. And so you can coexist on Earth, but the energies of each isn't permeating the other to where either can be captured. There's an
That's
actual
a cell
divide.
dividing.
Yeah, that's a cell dividing. Exactly.
The way I like a visual way of this, I've thought or like have actually seen in like a ceremony vision is humanity one becoming like alien grays where they upload their consciousness into like biomech bodies, and then the other being like Sasquatch people, like fully embedded in the earth and in earth magic, like. And they're just totally separate, and they have like
Yeah.
this like tenuous like agreement, like you know like they get along, but they don't really want to have anything to do with each other kind of thing.
Yeah, two potentialities.
Yeah.
Yeah, but within the same body of consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, two dividing cells, which are still adjacent to each other. They know of each other. They interact. Maybe they even share resources and energy, but they're two different cells now. You know, and one can potentially experience apoptosis.
What's apoptosis again?
Oh, death of a cell.
Oh yeah.
So, apocalypse.
Oh yeah. What, and I've heard Dennis McKenna say that like that for humanity into the earth, or like for humanity to survive, not only do we need to turn the earth into like a Garden of Eden, but also a large population of the earth has to leave it. And there's going to be people who want to explore like space and other planets. And so and it's also like, I think of it too as like, you know, your neighborhood friends, like some people left and then some people stayed home, you know? And so it's like a perfectly natural thing. And then to hear what you describe Bashar as like, oh yeah, it's like a dividing of the cell. It's just nature happening again. You know what I mean? Like it's just nature doing what it does. Is it just splits and divides and multiplies and then expresses variation.
Which on a grand level is what the multiverse is. You know, it's
Yeah.
the splitting of universes into multiple universes, becoming a multiverse. Who knows what the grandest perspective view on the multiverse is, but that would be interesting. My
Yeah.
mind cannot run that program of viewing something like that,
When I try
but.
to think about it, I want to puke. Like I'm kind of getting it.
Oh my God, that's hilarious, dude. I've had that reaction before too, where something is just like so kind of like perceptually challenging that like it creates a sort of like
Visceral.
yeah, like a visceral, like pur like wanting to purge. Like a lot of people feel that during kind of like the awakening process too. Like a lot of people have like you've seen Sanchi by now, for example. I think
Yeah.
I'm supposed to talk to her again pretty soon. By the way, I love talking to her. She's really funny, and she's really sincere. I like talking to her. Anyway, she's had a couple moments where like we're talking about this, and she's like, I need to throw up. And she's like, I feel sick, I feel nauseous. And that's we're clearly just expanding the parameters a little too quick in those moments. But it's a funny thing to notice what when what was once a combined consciousness, as it expands outside of its parameters, like there's these energetic, visceral reactions of the body, like trying to maintain selfhood, and that is kind of like the feeling of purging, to remind yourself, like, hey, let's not expand too much here, I'll get sick.
Did I? Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, it's also something that happens in ceremony, you know, like it's just so I take it as like always a really good sign.
It is. It's a purge of past paradigms.
There is a story that I was told by one of my Qigong teachers, from his teacher. They're doing like a weekend workshop thing, and like I guess like the energy got really intense, and he went to go put his hand on the wall, and his hand went through the wall, and all the people that saw it, there's three reactions. Oh no, I added the third one in the story, but I the two there's two reactions. Either they passed out or they started hysterically laughing. And then as my professor was telling the story, I was like, and the third would be the third was them puking.
Yeah, which was probably one of the responses. You're probably right, because that's a very natural response too. But yeah, all of those are symbolic of energetics. They're all symbolic of degrees of acceptance, you know what I mean? Whereas like the purging one, or it is like you're able to see it, you know, at least, but not really accept it. So you're purging like past paradigms. The ones that passed out are completely unable to even see it. And the
They don't
ones that
even remember it.
started laughing were in just pure acceptance of what is, but still had no ability to cope to the point where it was normal for them. It was still outside the normal paradigm, to where laughter was a symbolic representation of the energy of like being able to be in the proximity of witnessing it, but not full acceptance, to the point where it's in your normally accepted living. But the body still has this energetic reaction because it's not normal. So it has a not normal reaction necessarily, which.
He called it as like your jersh your what do you call it? Jerchy or something. Basically, like your sense of identity has these like teeth around it, and then when you like bump up to them, that's when everything gets like hairy, and so it's slowly expanding that the boundaries of that.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Man, I really want my boundaries fully expanded. I really
Yeah,
want to just be
it's just about
open.
then exploring where they actually are. Like one of the things that I like doing with time, for example, is trying to find a beginning point to now. When does now begin?
It's always been.
You
That's
can't find a,
what's.
can you find an end to now?
No. You have to slice it.
And it's only
And
the
that's just
mind
a
that does
concept,
that. Yeah,
huh?
it's only the mind that does that, to try to preserve a sense of it thinking it knows something. So that's one of the things that you can do with time, to find the parameters of time. And in that, as you continue to explore that just dissolves time completely into the eternal now. It just becomes the eternal now.
When I look at it directly, it feels very spacious and panoramic. Like, it almost feels like the concept of time has now been pushed out to become like a bubble that's outside of my experience.
Yeah, are
And
you ever
then
trying
now
to
is,
find the parameters of the bubble? Like, where is the actual edge of the bubble? Because it's still the mind thinking there's a bubble. It's just a wider bubble.
Yeah, it's when it, and it's like the notion of a bubble, but the actual experience is like it's not literally a bubble with like edges and boundaries. It's just like all of a sudden I was like in my mind, and you're like in experience of time, and then when looking at it directly, it's almost like that notion just goes, and there's just now. There's just experience.
Isn't that fucking peculiar?
That
That's one of the doorways to the living mystery. That's one of the ways to get there. Understand clearly that there is no beginning or end to now. You can't find one. So stick with your direct experience, and you'll quickly realize, if you're very honest with yourself, that now just must be eternal. Because there's no concepts of body there. Body's not eternal. In just pure experience, there's no body, there's just sensation. And that sensation is just flowing through this eternal now that has no beginning or end. You can't find one because there isn't one. That's eternity.
So, what do you mean that there's no body in the now?
Well, the body is just a thought form. We've kind of established that. Like, the body is a thought form. Like, in order for you to know that there's a body, there's like a thought that
It's,
you are this body.
yeah, no, I've actually had, okay, now I get what you're saying. Because I've had that a lot. That happens every time I sit down to meditate, where it's like I drop into sensation. And then there's an immediate recognition of the difference between experience of sensation and then like the thought form of me and my body. You know, like, and that's why sometimes open eye meditation is almost easier for me because I look back for me and there's nothing to find. But then when my eyes are closed, it's almost, I'll look into the darkness, and it's harder because I have to like look at what's arising in the darkness to then look back and see I can't find myself. Because otherwise, when I close my eyes, it's too easy for me to think of like, oh, I'm just behind my eyelids. Like, you know what I mean?
But of course, that's a thought.
Totally. I know it's a thought, but I'm saying it's harder to disidentify. I recognize it as a thought and a form, and through regular experience, I know that it's just that thought form is a separate object appearing in experience. And sometimes it can, like with the anxiety, where it became identified, and then when I allowed it, it became a part of the full.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Experience. Sometimes I get to a place of acceptance where that feet that like thought form of me and my body can sit alongside the spectrum of ex all the other experience, and it's not so centralized, it's been decentralized, and then there's just the experience,
As
but it's
part as
so
just part of the
grabby,
sensory experience.
yeah, but it's still so grabby, like it's so sticky that it's so easy to get like I can rest into not non-attachment to it, but it's still so sticky and easy for to get caught up in identifying as it, you know. Yeah,
totally.
And I think just general impatience, and I try to like obliterate it. It doesn't fucking work. It makes things worse. So I remember one time where you told me, it was like, it's like you have to really relax into it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I can, and I don't even know where the force is coming from. Maybe force of focus. Sometimes with force, there will be clarity of like, one time you walked me through a inquiry, and it was like that sense of self fully blipped out. And it was just this moment of pure, and even now looking back on it, it's like, was this a dream? Did I actually even experience this? But it was just like a full clarity of like, whoa, the self was gone, yet presence remained.
Yes.
And it was so freeing. And then I was like so attached to creating those conditions again, but then like I couldn't use force. And I remember one time you saying you have to relax into it. And that's, I think that's what led me into the, back into the listening practice, because it's just so relaxed.
Which is a good one.
Yeah.
The pure listening to experience is another way of just allowing what is, and becoming fully sensorially accepting of the present moment.
Yeah.
Of presence. Yeah, really, you are just this alive presence. And of course, that's a concept until you truly investigate everything, and it just dissolves into a live presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just about this investigation. Like, you're at the point where you know that you are just this consciousness, right? And so now it's just about investigating what is this consciousness's relationship to everything else.
Mm.
Like for example, me holding this beer bottle, like, the mind says this is a beer bottle that's separate from me. If I actually go into direct experience of this and just actually look at all of the sensations, including sight, which seems to project something over here, a sense of distance.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I'm being really honest with my direct experience, this is in my awareness just as much as my eyeballs are in my awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so the distance between here and here is a projection of thought. Both these things are equally central to my awareness. My awareness is not centralized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it has like the feeling of almost being like bird's eye view, but not.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Or like almost like space is awake.
Exactly. That's the sense. That's the sense. Earlier you said there's just this presence, and yes, there's this alive presence. You could also equally say, in a correct way, there's just this space, like you just said. There's just this alive, aware space. That's what ends up becoming your kind of like lived being. It feels like just alive space and everything moving through it.
There's
modulations of it, colorations of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like then all those modulations, this beer bottle, for example, is self, is a modulation of self, is a coloring of my own awareness.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, and that's what's so, this is cool. I've never made this connection before, but that's what journeying is like. Because the eyes are closed, the drum is pulling the thought form of Luke. It's pulling it out of the way really gently. It's like entrapping it, kind of. And then when you're in that space, it's just like sometimes you're aware of your spirit self as I'm like looking through my eyes, and sometimes I'm like aware of it from way back here or above it, or you know, it doesn't matter. It's non-local. And then it's just like everything's just happening, but it's just not as solid as this. And it's It's cool. Because it's the same, just different.
It is, yeah, yeah. It is the same. Like, there's so many parallels in the shamanic journey, or all of these other modalities of investigating the nature of self and the nature of reality and the nature of consciousness, to where these all kind of dissolve into one thing.
Yeah, totally. And because they are one thing.
Yeah. They're just different
It's
ways
just
of looking.
And different ways of, yeah, exactly. Totally. Yeah.
Different ways in which consciousness appears to itself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the exact same thing, actually, as the difference between you, Luke, and me, Chris. It's just two different ways of looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one substance. Like that undifferentiated consciousness, pure consciousness, that's looking through Luke's eyes and looking through Chris's eyes and looking through Duke's eyes and looking through anything that we apply consciousness to, his eyes or perception, any other sense, you know, is the same ground of being. It is the same ground. It is pure consciousness. And they're all different ways of looking. It's all different ways, different lenses consciousness puts on to experience itself.
Yeah. It's true.
It's true.
We really got to quit just figuring it all out.
Yeah, they're gonna zap us pretty soon.
Yeah, totally.
Consciousness is gonna be like, all right, this game isn't funny anymore. They already ran through the game board. All right,
yeah, they already know it.
Right,
they got the cheat codes. Who gave them the fucking cheat codes?
These guys are fucking cheating. Yeah. It's like on Grand Theft Auto, you can put it on God mode.
Yeah,
where you're like invincible and unlimited ammo. You can do anything you want. Not that these physical characters can do that, but it's like that's kind of what consciousness becomes, because it becomes like knowingly invincible. Like you can disrupt all of this. You can cut this head off. There is still this recognition of a ground of being, which is just the recognition of consciousness as itself. And that is untouchable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you become truly stabilized there, this thought of death is just a thought, like a thought of taking a piss, a thought of, you
taking
know what
a
I
shit.
mean? You take a shit, like you'll flush the body like you flush a shit. Like, there's reverence to this, you know, like you appreciate this mode of being for the little time that it exists, but ultimately there's no grabbing on to it, you know. There's an enjoyment of it as it is, while it is, and a full knowing that this is a temporary modulation of who and what I ultimately am.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And there's like a, and also like every little death that I've had, the freshness and like vitality that's on the other side of that is always just so pleasant.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just so, and it's just like, yeah, it's just so refreshing, you
totally
know?
totally yeah the dropping of parameters and concepts of self and different identities that we attach ourselves to, they're comforting because you feel safe in them, but on the other side of that is freedom. The more of those parameters that you can drop, of ideology and self and rigid modes of thought, the more you of those you can drop, they're replaced by expansiveness, this feeling of freedom. This is why enlightenment is ultimate freedom.
Totally. And it's also like, I've just been reflecting on how I used to feel about myself being wanting to stay like hidden and stuck. And I used to get so angry at it. And then, but like now I can only see it with compassion and being like, it's okay. You know, like,
yeah,
like, and like with real, yeah, with compassion and like, not pity, but just yeah, just compassion, you
Yeah,
know, and patience. And it's like,
a tender love.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is kind of like held in this tender love, you know, from this perspective, this blown apart perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's kind of just cradled as that, including all of it. It's iterations of ignorance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you see people really stuck in a paradigm, for example, and like there's not really a thought of like being a savior at all. Like you
No.
don't even try to change it for them necessarily. You just kind of like hold them in this knowing space. You know what I mean? Of just this, you accept them exactly as they are for what they're going through in that moment, and you allow it to be exactly as it is, exactly as they are. Because oftentimes there's this recognition that they aren't ready to let those things go. They aren't
Yeah.
ready to let those parameters that guide their life go. And so there's this tenderness towards it. There's this compassion, like you said. There's this allowing love.
Yeah.
Like a baby.
One.
Or a
Yeah.
puppy.
Well, and I guess I'm like, what's it's. I'm curious if that's a way to work with one's own self that doesn't want to let go.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah, approach it in exactly the same tender, loving, compassionate way. Hold it with love. Allow it to be. Don't try to change anything about it. You
Yeah.
know, trying to push against what is the definition of suffering.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say it, not only if I can get Duke to not be afraid of the heater.
Does he jump every time it comes on or something?
You know how sometimes like when a heater's like changing temperature, it makes a dink
Oh
noise.
yeah.
He goes, whoa, shit, and he like gets up and
Every time.
it, yeah, every time. He's so
Oh,
scared of it. I've tried
Duke.
giving him treats. Like, and I used to get so frustrated because I would like keep me up at night. He could just like stand over my bed. Get so frustrated, and now I'm like, dude, it's okay, like it's fine. But it's just the conversation is just reminding me of that, and like reminding me to be like a little bit more patient
Yeah.
with them, as afraid of the heater that's not really gonna hurt them.
Duke is such a sweetheart.
In like a camping one would be fucking sweet, and I
That was the original intent, to just like get a group of folks around a campfire, camp in, and that's gonna happen. That's definitely part of it.
I want to be there
Cause we
when it happens.
well you and I have these conversations anyways. We've always had these conversations since day one. We've had these types of conversations, spiritual, you know,
Yeah.
in a spiritual direction, and like we've already like elucidated, with two looking, it's powerful. With multiple looking in the same direction in these avenues, it's exponentialed. And so I would be very curious to see what happens in a person-to-person setting around a campfire.
Did you feel like there was any sh 'cause I mean I 100% absolutely I always th I feel like the strongest is in person, and it's just like this, it creates a fire, you know, like within oneself. But but I also do think that like gathering even digitally can have an effect. Did you notice any, did you feel like any shift or any like change in yourself or in like in maybe what others have shared? Like, did you notice any, like, did they or did you notice any shift from the gathering together?
Definitely. And in fact, I even intentionally said it very explicitly. In the second one, I said there is a real opportunity here for somebody to truly realize their fundamental nature in their direct experience. And if you are super open and honest to this experience, it will be you. Like, because that is the true potential. I don't want people to
arrive at these meetings and try to gain some sort of better mental understanding. Like, that's cool, but you can also just Google that shit. Like you're talking about, there's a real energy when people get together. And I want people to acknowledge that, because in the acknowledgement of it, you feel it more viscerally. And it can then have more an effect upon you. And so I think in recognition of that possibility, in openly, honestly saying that that is a possibility here, and in fact that is the point of satsang, to awaken, to have these conversations to the point where there is an energetic release or parameters blown open for us and everybody, for the group. And yes, it did feel that way. There were definitely some energetic releases that you were like, this person has expanded in this now moment. And usually I try to point that out, because it's important for people to recognize when those parameter shifts happen, because then when they happen on their own, it's less scary. Because sometimes it can be scary. A lot of times when parameters are blown open, they can be met with fear, or with like you said, you can feel sort of like a little nauseous or whatever. And those are regular experiences. But if we can regularize not only the conversation about it, but also the energetic shifts that accompany it, I think that's a really powerful.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Powerful thing to do. It should just normalize those types of things, because I've seen a lot of them. I've seen a lot of it in the one-on-one conversations, and now in the group satsang. And the group satsang really does feel like it's taking on a sort of energy about it. Like the first one, you felt the sparks. In the second one, it felt like the kindling was gaining ignition. And so I am excited to see what kind of energy is there in the next couple of satsangs.
It's interesting. I have this thing, and I want to say not as like not as a challenge, or not as like a against, but like a and. But sometimes in my experience, I feel like calling it out makes it harder.
Yeah, it can be.
So, or at least for me. And then also certain circles I've been in, it's like not kept secret, but not also point, like, it's like been like in the group, in this group, I don't talk about, or I don't talk much about like what it's going to do, or what I expect it to do, because then it almost gets in the way and of what the person might be uniquely experiencing. And then also in other times where it's like, in other circles, not in like a talking circle, but in other practices, we're doing one thing. And then like a byproduct of it was that like opening. And then I was like about to share like what happened, and the teacher was just like, "No, stop, 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 stop. Like, don't." But so I just, So I'm not challenging it, but I'm just offering. I just think it's interesting the different ways that it can be approached,
No,
you know?
I think what you're saying is super valuable, and I want to highlight it because you're right. If when you talk about it, you can take the magic out of it. You can take the actual happening out of it, because then people look to expect that as like an event happening. And in the looking for that event to happen, there's a tension there that doesn't allow it to happen. You know, and so that's a real possibility. My counter argument to that, and it's not really a counter argument, because that's true, that's real, that happens. But also what happens is, if people can hear that this is a real possibility and it's felt more close to them than the guru on the mountain, you know, that this experience, that this enlightenment is reserved for a special few that live in a cave in the Himalayas. That's been the thought. That's been the leading thought for the last, you know, hundreds of years, in which, you know, Buddhism is kind of, and the Enlightenment culture has kind of been reserved for the monastery, or reserved for the cave, reserved for the cushion. You know, I'm trying to bring it out of the cave. I'm trying to bring it off the mountaintop. I'm trying to bring meditation off of the cushion and trying to make this shit very, very practical, and saying, hey, this is a real possibility for you here and now. You don't need any sort of specialness. You don't need any sort of an initiation or 10 years sitting in silence. You don't need anything outside of who and what you are right now to discover this, because it's already the case. And the more I can bring this into the visceral feeling of nowness, of here-ness for people, in my experience, that's potent. That can result in things. And I've seen it. I've seen parameters be let loose. I've seen people gain greater senses of freedom through these conversations. And so what you're saying is true, and that is a real hurdle, that and that can be a stumbling block. But that's also the reason where I most often try to bring people into what we've called the living mystery, the light of knowing, where there is just no knowability, no grasping to any known concepts. And then I just sit them there, and I don't tell them what to expect. Like, once I just try to get people to there. And it takes words oftentimes to get people into that energetic place of looking. And so like words are necessary up until that point. And then there's the total release of descriptors. And I just try to bring people there to that living mystery.
When, and that actually reminds me of something I literally just read today, was this book on pulse diagnosis by Bob Flaws. He's like a guy, he's like a not Chinese guy, but in the beginning he talks about when he was working with the Tibetan medicine, or he was working with Tibetan language lesson, and his teacher had him start by spelling out the Tibetan word Lao, which means easy. And it was ensuring a good omen at the beginning. And he's reckoned it to, like, same thing with like learning pulse diagnosis or learning anything that's hard, understanding that it's easy and accessible is encouraging for like continuing to take the action. It encourages like it is possible. It's like encourage, and that's what I hear you saying, and I totally get it. And also kind of reminds me of kind of like an opening invocation for for the container. It's like dropping that intention or that like in yeah invocation of like, this is here right now and it's accessible now for everyone. It's just yeah. So totally, I get that. I get now. I get
Yeah, and there's a recognition and a saying, so that the potency is not in the words. It's not in anything that I'm saying. It's only in the place that you arrive at as a result of maybe the words guiding you. Like, the words are just a map. They're just a symbolic of the terrain. but the map is not the terrain. I'm just offering a map. You need to go to the terrain inside yourself.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's, yeah, and it's all about the direct experience of whatever's happening.
That's the only thing.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I guide to is people's direct experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it can take words, but those words can give people the confidence and comfortability to be able to sit in the unknown.
Yeah.
To know that, like, I'm not going to die if I sit in the unknown.
Totally. Yeah. Well, man, it's like, I certainly have an attachment now to the experience of when the sense of separate self blips out, because it's like every time has been splendid. I'm like, yeah.
So a better way to frame that I've found is not necessarily that there's an attachment to that, but that there's now a gravitational pull of the truth. The
100%
truth has a gravity. And so that's what you're feeling. It's not an attachment, it's a gravity.
Totally. And I remember you hear, I love connecting multiple, like, I love connecting different systems and models and seeing how, like, things are interwoven, interconnected. But I remember you telling me before, like, this has a gravity. And I remember you saying that you were unsure whether to, like, this was before you started doing posts and stuff, and you were unsure because you're like, it does have a gravity. And, like, I don't know if people are, like, ready for it or whatever. And I remember thinking, like, huh, that is, yeah, kind of spooky. But then, that always stayed with me with the gravity. And in Qigong, so everything's qi, and we call it yin yang, but really it's one, but they have different qualities. And yang qi feels like static electricity. It's like, in one book he describes it as like the solar quality of energy, and that yin energy is like gravity, and it's like this inward pulling. And I've, in direct experience, I've felt yin qi and yang qi. And it's like, what is more supremely yin than the pure awareness, you know, pure emptiness, you know, it's the, and then there's expression out of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does have a gravity. And it's, and into what you're saying, yeah, those experiences, I'm so grateful that I've had enough experiences where it's like, I'm not afraid to sit in that space. It's just a matter of, like, as far as I can tell, just repeating it over and over and over, you know?
Yeah, when you're no longer scared of it, it's almost like you've escaped orbit. You've escaped, like, the pull of identity self, and now you're able to kind of free float and be pulled by, like, no longer physical gravity, but now a spiritual gravity. You, like, you've escaped orbit of the personal identity pull, and now you're entering into the orbit of the true essence here.
When, and now the personal identity pull is in a different direction, where it's like where I was saying, like, I was trying to, like, force it to happening, but then that's more of the identity that's, you know, like the quote from Rupert Spira I really like that I've mentioned to you before is that ego is not an entity that seeks and resists. Ego is the activity of seeking and resisting. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, it was like I was seeking the experience rather than allowing its own natural progression of falling away. Mm-hmm. And this conversation has helped me clarify that immensely, of just like, at least there's like a go-to step, or like still staying present to whatever the situation is calling for and allowing that. But it's just a good reminder to like, oh, the seeking and resisting has taken on a new appearance, you know, whereas before it was really seeking and holding on to maintaining hidden, and now it's just seeking, apparently trying to like unsheathe itself. But it's like, buddy, you don't have the control. It's not about control.
Yeah,
it's literally not even about control.
Yeah, yeah. That I mean, what you're describing is literally what's called like the dissipation of the seeker energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as like the the tension that is inbuilt, or like the seeker energy is like the activity of seeking. As soon as like that kind of subsides, then it's revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Like the energy of seeking, just like the energy of resisting is the ego. The energy of seeking is the seeker, and it keeps you from the experience in the same way.
Totally.
That's why eventually the seeker must be let go of. Like the path, like the this is the pathless path. The direct path is the pathless path because you let go of the seeker. You're no longer identified with a seeker, spiritual seeker on the path to enlightenment. You're like, no, the path is made of enlightenment.
Yeah.
The seeker is made of enlightenment.
Yeah. When it's even that same level of refinement is even happening, not just in my spiritual practice, my meditation practice, but it's happening in the way I show up for like my homework.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like where I was like trying to learn, must learn, force it, and then it's like, or avoid it. And now I'm just like sitting in it and then just doing it and just enjoying it, you know, like enjoying the process of learning instead of trying to learn or like doing everything I can to not do my homework, you know. And it's funny how it happens multidimensionally. Like it's like happening everywhere all at once.
And the more that you notice that, the more that you notice that it's permeating even the homework, the more you're welcoming it into being recognized as all things.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yes. There was even a moment today where a old thought loop of like who I want to be, what I want to look like, all these things like trying like popped up. And there was just a moment where it was like that was happening. And then there was an observation just went. And I looked at it. I was like, oh, that's ego activity. It's like, oh. And then it just kind of dropped. It's like, huh. I was like, I suppose I'll just dress and decorate myself however I enjoy doing when it's time to do that.
Like exactly. You know what I mean? And notice that that's freedom. Notice the freedom in that.
Yeah.
Not having to show up anyway, any prescribed way, you know, not having to look a certain way. It'll just trusting that like you'll show up the way you're going to show up like, and there can be intention there. That's fine. But like to project it is not helpful. And it's the activity of resisting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ego,
mm-hmm.
the activity of resisting
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is what that projection is.
Oh, my head hurts. I think I'm tired.
I wonder how long we've been talking. 4 hours almost.
We've been talking for 4 hours.
Well, if we jumped on at 7, it's 10:41, so like 3 hours and 41 minutes.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's cool, man. I'm really grateful that we got to catch up and talk. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Well, get some sleeps.
Yeah, you too, man.
I will. Love you, Luke.
Love you too, Chris.
All right, we'll talk soon.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
If you found this video helpful, please consider liking, subscribing, and sharing. Thank you. All my love.